Thank you so much for joining us, Robin.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me, Ruby.
Oh, my pleasure. Now, firstly, although it's quite a big question because the spectrum itself is quite broad, what exactly is autism?
Well, I was a bit disappointed to hear you say that it's the most widely understood, because I think the community are getting better, but you're probably right, because we've gone from having autistic disorder and Asperger's, now referring to it as autism spectrum disorder, maybe people need to be demystified a little bit, or the disorder does, but essentially it's a communication disorder. So people on the spectrum have an inability to, I guess, communicate, to approach people, to understand nonverbal communication, and to develop friendships appropriate to developmental levels. But coupled with that, they also have what we call ritualistic and repetitive behaviours, so they can manifest in the body, like flicking, pacing, flapping, or verbally by saying things repetitively. They can be consumed by special interests. And also added to the criteria in 2013 was the sensory sensitivity, which we've known has been there for a long time, and that's often problems with noise or taste or texture or touch and so forth.
Of course. And, you know, it is, people are getting better. But, you know, when it comes down to it, it is, in its own way, it is still quite misunderstood.
I think the difficulty is because it is such a diverse disorder that people meet a person with autism and then they then get the perception that's what an autistic person is like, and don't realise there's such diversity and heterogeneity within the spectrum. So I think of my adult group, you know, I have an adult group that I run, and, you know, people range there with people from intellectual disabilities to psychiatrists. You know, the diversity is quite broad. And so people do tend to stereotype, I guess, because of their lack of familiarity with the condition.
Absolutely. And with the spectrum, would you be able to explain to us what the spectrum means and how exactly this helps us to understand that autism is a different condition for everyone?
Yeah, well, I guess before we had more discrete disorders like autistic disorder, Asperger's syndrome, and they had different diagnostic criteria. But we've realised that they aren't sort of mutually distinct disorders, and we have commonality in families or people having autistic and Asperger kids within the one family. So we realise they're not genetically distinct. So what we now have is this wider range of ability with people who, I guess, because of their intellect, can camouflage their abilities, they can learn the skills. I often equate autism to, you know, the skills can be learned like a second language, and the earlier you learn it, the more equipped you are, almost like not, you know, being flawless in a second language. It's not intuitive or native for you, but you can learn the skills. And that's obviously a product of intellect. And there's those kids that have, coupled with that, have an intellectual disability or significant language impairment. So many of whom will remain nonverbal for the rest of their lives. So there's this whole spectrum, right from one end of the spectrum of nonverbal children with intellectual disabilities to, you know, high-functioning lawyers, architects, psychiatrists, very intelligent people, but still having a real problem being able to initiate social interaction unless they're following a script, have problems maintaining relationships, have problems picking up those subtle nuances of verbal and nonverbal communication. So it's a huge variety, yet the criteria is quite distinct. So they all meet the criteria, yet the presentation is diverse.
Absolutely. And so research has shown that girls and boys display autism differently. So how is this so, and what exactly are these differences?
Well, I think it's quite interesting that the female presentation has really been very largely misunderstood. So when I first started doing research among autism, this is going back almost 30 years, the female ratio to males was about 14 to 1 in the higher functioning of people on the spectrum. So it's standard 4 to 1, but the higher functioning was 14 to 1. And that's certainly coming down with the understanding that there's a lot of women out there that also have the condition, and many of whom are being diagnosed in their 20s and 30s because they weren't picked up at school. And I guess because the way we socialise women in particular, they're encouraged to pretend more, to mimic more, and they often don't engage in externalising behaviours like, you know, lashing out or aggression. So they often are missed, and they learn to sort of manage the behaviour sometimes better overtly, but then have massive meltdowns often when they come home from school, or develop comorbid conditions like depression, anxiety, as they're trying to manage this condition. But it's interesting, we do have a female sort of presentation, but you know, it's not uncommon for me to see a male that's also been missed because their presentation is more consistent with a female. So their obsessive interest might be in a particular person, so it's not seen as so unusual, or they might be internalising their behaviours more or camouflaging it in a way that women do. And similarly, you get girls who are more having the male presentation as well. So it's not strictly bimodal, like it's not males and females, but there seems to be what we stereotype as a bit of a male presentation, and the female presentation for many of the females is somewhat different.
Yeah, right. Now, lastly, but certainly not least, what are some common myths about autism that you would like to squash today?
Well, I think one of the common things is that they, you know, using the word they is quite annoying for me, that they do this or they do that, because they is, as I said, it's a diverse group. So I think one of the most important things is that people on the autism spectrum don't want to have friends. They're aloof, and they don't want to interact. And for many of the children, that's just not true. They try to interact. They try to approach. They might do so inappropriately, so going over to another little child and punching them or pinching them or pulling their hair or rubbing their belly or some way trying to initiate a social interaction that gets a reaction. And then because of that, you know, they might be told off and that, and their advances are not welcomed. So they then might choose then to retreat and become more aloof and more asocial because life is too difficult for them. So I think one of the most important things to recognise is that many of the people on the spectrum would like the opportunity to be more social. They just don't have the skills to do that. And working with them and supporting them as peers and friendship, we can often teach them the skills and accept that whatever they're doing is not intentionally incorrect. They just don't know perhaps the right way to do it and might need to be educated in the way that they should engage appropriately.
Of course. Well, thank you so, so much for joining us, Robin. It's been really great having you on the show to talk about this.
You're very welcome, and thanks for your interest, Ruby.
Oh, my pleasure.